3, 2, 1.
You've got to respect a man who can rock a cravat.
I'm just going
to
say it, Donny. I don't care how you feel about it.
She's got more energy than Heinz has pickles.
It's a puppet.
I feel like everything's closing in.
She was dating my brother.
No, it's not that one.
But I like it. Keep it in.
What happened in Vegas with Piff and Paul?
Hello, it's me, Piff the Mad Dragon, and Paul DeBeck here for another What Happened in Vegas. This week, starring Donny Osmond.
Oh, this was good.
Donny Osmond. This was,
I mean, you've been a big fan
of since, Donny Osmond.
Yeah, since you got here, even.
Yeah. No, but, that's not true. I didn't interact with him for about 4 years.
Okay.
And he came to our show one night, and he was so incredible.
Do you know how incredible he is? And I haven't even seen his show yet. That I'm desperate to trip him up because he was so lovely.
He's amazing.
And so professional, but also just lovely.
That's
and
then what everyone, humanity could be.
Everyone I bump into, I'm like, that I've. So yesterday I was over at the warehouse and we had some costume fittings happening for a production company. And one of the people had worked wardrobe on tour with him. And I was like, so, tell me about Donny. I was like trying to be dead straight because, you know, sometimes you're like, is he amazing to me?
Right.
You know, and they're like, of course, yeah, he's brilliant. I'm like trying to, I cannot get a negative word from anyone. He walked, now it sounds like I'm trying to assassinate Donny Osmond. I'm not. He walked in here. This was fascinating. He was a minute late or maybe 30 seconds late or he was going to be late.
He was going to be late.
Like, when I say covered in sweat, I still mean Donny Osmond looking stunning, but just sort of beads of sweat. And we're like, are you okay? He's like, oh, I was just running a little late from the car. He didn't want to be late.
He was drenched. He was drenched in sweat.
And we had to wait a little while.
We had to towel him down.
And he was sort of half a... And he walked in the room, he gave you a hug, and then he looked straight at me and he went, Paul, nice to meet you. Now, he doesn't know that I co-host. We haven't launched yet, any of that. He had done his, maybe he mentioned Janice or whatever, but he had remembered and made a point of trying to make me feel at ease. And then as we did the interview and everything, you know, a lot of turning to me. I didn't get that till an hour and a half into Penn Jillette. In fact, Penn Jillette walked in this thing, talked to you for 20 minutes, and then with beautiful comedy timing turned and went, who the fuck are you? You to me, which was also a great bit. And we ended up, I also ended up becoming a huge fan of him as a human. But Donny, just class act from start to finish.
Yeah, 100%.
And not like put on. I mean, obviously there's must be some professionalism and choice to be that way because no human can do that all the time and be so, you know, he knows. I think he talks about it like having lost it two or three times the career.
Did he say on air how much money he thought it was?
It was millions.
Was it
20 million or something like
no,
that?
No, it was 80.
That got kind of just spent.
Got spent without him.
His associates.
Unbelievable.
I mean, I operate like that on a much smaller scale.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I might charge a Starbucks order to your...
Yeah, that's how it happens.
That's how it happens. Like I have a company credit card, please.
We got rid of all those company credit cards.
I understand now having some employees and business who are all lovely, but like...
They're very nice people.
When it's not your money,
it's like
a different world.
Yeah. Then, a couple of days later... We went to see a show, but not you.
No, I didn't. You just off air, you happened to have mentioned it. But I
can tell you the day.
I think on air, I say how much I'm looking forward to seeing the show. And you say, oh, we'll go together. I am now sitting here having never seen Donny Osmond live. And you just swanned over there without me.
Yeah, I did. But
didn't
I
even
cannot,
text me.
I cannot imagine that I did this without... You being available.
Is this because I didn't do the last two All-Stars dates? Is that what this is about?
Maybe.
Suddenly I'm out of the picture.
I mean, here's
the thing. Is this because Nikki has been embezzling your funds?
It was the 17th of October.
Right.
What were you doing?
I was here.
No, but what were you doing in the evening?
You didn't text me to ask. You're now just clutching at straws. Who did you go with?
I'll tell you who I went with.
Yeah.
Jade.
Yeah, okay.
Just the two of you.
Was it just the two of you?
I know why. Because I wasn't going.
What?
I wasn't going to Donny Osmond.
Everyone else was.
It was Micah wanted to go.
Yeah, I was supposed to go with Micah.
And not me?
No, I didn't take anyone. No,
I was supposed to go with Micah.
Me too.
That's what we said. You took my ticket.
You took Micah and not me.
Why are you getting in on this, Janice?
Did you interview Donny Osmond? He hugged me goodbye. We were all a part of the Donny Love Fest.
I was busy that day.
Yeah, hang on. But Micah and I have never seen him. And we stood there going, okay, we're going to go and see it. I'll go, me and you will go, Micah. So what happened there is you took my ticket to Donny Osmond. You were never invited.
No, I wasn't.
Just like me.
And I just had, I had a crazy day and it ended much earlier than I thought it would.
And you're like, what I need.
So I was like, oh yeah, I can come
to
Donny
now. What I need is, let's get down to business. Huh.
Anyway.
Was it good?
Here's how great it was. Donny, in the middle of the show.
Don't tell me. Don't. What happened? Did he say he'd been on the podcast?
No.
In the middle of the show?
No.
Did he mention me?
No.
Oh.
In the middle of the show, he said, hey, where's my friend? My friend's here. Where's Piff the Magic Dragon? And then he came over to Jade and I, and he said, Piff's got the funniest show in Vegas. You got to see this show. Piff's amazing. Everyone go see Piff the Magic Dragon. And then he said, oh, and Jade's here too. And Jade stood up and gave him a hug. And then Jade hadn't seen him since we got engaged. So Jade showed him her ring. And Donny was like, what? Come with me. And then he brought us up on stage and he serenaded us for
about
5 minutes.
See, that could have been me and Jade. Me and Jade could have been on that stage being serenaded if you hadn't taken my spot.
That's what happened.
I could have been there filming it for social media. That sounds like a great social media clip.
Oh, Janice is furious. Yeah. Do you know what? I'm stepping out.
This is the last straw.
First, Nobu.
Then, what was the other thing you didn't invite me to? What's the other thing you didn't invite me to? Oh, and then Adam Sandler. And then now Donny.
Adam Sandler? What?
We went, Jade and I went to see Adam Sandler.
Without me?
Without anyone. That was our date night.
I'm kidding on that one. But not Nobu.
No, I do feel bad about the Donny. I think it was
no,
just...
No, no. Now you're feeling bad about the Donny.
Yeah, you're right. Because at the time I thought that you shouldn't be there. I thought there was a reason.
Why shouldn't I be
like,
there?
Because you were busy or something. At the time...
Digging the knife.
Listen,
more.
What I'm
are you sure you,
you know
busy?
What I'm loving as if the fans of this podcast.
I mean, Janice wasn't invited, but you
right. At least as if the fans of this podcast are not wondering enough why I'm here. I don't need you making it worse.
No, I'm wondering why you're not there.
Yeah.
Are you sure you weren't busy?
I'm not going to release this tension faucet for you. I may have to. I've got this funny feeling that I know where I was. And if I was there, I'm going to have to
walk it back.
16th of October, was
17th.
It? Yeah.
Oh, what? You were doing something?
Oh, in the evening?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, come on.
Friday the 17th?
Yeah, in the evening.
I was back.
Where were you?
I'd been in Hawaii for a few days.
Oh, wait, we thought you were in Hawaii.
Oh, convenient, yeah.
Micah did.
You know what you got to do?
So maybe that's
no,
it.
You know what you got to do?
I could have just reached out.
You could have just reached out.
Yeah. We thought you were in Hawaii, that's
this
it.
This is supposed to be a safe space.
Not on this podcast. Not anymore. Not in this episode.
How have we... This is really sad because this is... We are here to celebrate the legend that is Donny Osmond, which couldn't be a more loving, inclusive,
right,
wonderful human being. And it's become... Look at the tension between me, you, and Janice. Right?
Well,
me
I'm
and Janice
fine now.
Are fighting for the one place that's available.
No, I think that's what happened. We thought you were in Hawaii. Now, we could have checked, but we didn't. So, there's that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
No, good.
Mystery
it was
solved.
Amazing. Look, it sounds like it was a wonderful time and would have been real bonding experience for this team
it would
of this
have been
podcast.
Good. It would have been really good.
Should we go back and see Donny? Janice, should we pretend that we got engaged?
Yes.
Great.
You've only got 2 weeks to see him. And then he breaks for a few months.
Let's go see.
Why are you saying it like you're not our in? Oh, you better hurry up. You've only got 2 weeks. I've got 2 weeks to plan another company trip that we're not involved in. I'm glad I've still got that company credit card.
All right. Well, here is my friend who I went to see all by himself, Donny Osmond. We are here with one of my all-time favorite people of people everywhere, a legend, a hero, Donny Osmond.
You said that just like I wrote it. Thank you. Thank
no
you,
problem.
John. Appreciate that. By the way, how you doing, Paul?
I'm good.
Nice to
Thank
meet you.
It's nice to meet yeah. you.
We go way back.
I know.
Yeah.
The thing is about that intro, I know that you didn't write it because that is something that Piff says all the time behind your back. Also.
Everybody gets that kind of an intro.
I would love to, you know, send him up and say that he doesn't, but he does.
Really? You know where people, talk bad about you behind your back?
Yeah.
I'm the opposite for you.
Really?
I go out of my way to say very nice things about you because I love you so very much.
So you get my checks weekly then?
No. They go to Jade and they're payable to the dog.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Piff.
You know, when I came to Vegas originally in 2013 to do a small part in a big show. That show crashed and burned. I was stuck here for a year, homeless. Went on America's Got Talent, got enough recognition to do my own show at the Flamingo, and you were the big show in the big showroom at the Flamingo, you and Marie, for all of those years. I think you were just a sort of whispered myth to me for most of those years. And then a few years in, you came to the show at the in the little room, and you just laughed all the way through the show.
I did.
You were the greatest audience member. You came down after you met us. And then when we moved into the big room here and you went and did your solo show, since then you've become more of a I'm gonna say friend. I'm just gonna say it, Donny. I don't care how you feel about it. I'm just gonna call you a friend because that's what I put on my resume.
Well, the feeling's mutual. It really is, Pip.
And so you're one of my favorite. You've just been such a great presence in our lives.
Thank you.
In our journey at the Flamingo. So how did you get here?
Actually, I walked over.
But you ran over from here.
Yeah. No, actually, I was doing some running.
Yeah.
Because I totally miscalculated departure from my home. And I had to go to the Harrah's real fast.
You had to go via Harrah's. Where's your home? How many minutes are we talking here?
26.
26 minutes from your house to Harrah's.
Mm-hmm.
What time did you leave?
I left at about 45 minutes ago.
Right.
This is how professional and nice Donny Osmond is.
I don't think anyone else.
You ran to our little podcast.
I have this behind me just in case.
I was late. I didn't run. I was trying to be all rock and roll and arrive late. Donny Osmond.
Perfectly on time.
Perfectly on time. Perfectly.
Barely made it. Barely.
One but that's still on time. Sweat. Yeah.
You can't be late if you're on time.
That's right.
And you're covered in sweat.
Yep.
And I was like, once again, what a legend. What a legend.
Thank you.
How did you become like this?
Well, first of all,
do you work at this every day?
Answer, because otherwise I'm going to sound egotistical. But I have to give all my credit to my mom and dad. They were such great examples to me.
What's wrong with my parents?
I've never met
you. Mom and Dad, why didn't you make me like Donny Osmond?
I feel that might be your doing, because I've met your mom and dad, and they're very, very nice. Respectful.
You've met my mom. They love you.
I mean, your father wears cravats.
Oh, at the party.
Yeah.
At the party. Yes.
Yeah, you've worn them.
Piff's dad wears a cravat, and you've got to respect a man who can rock a cravat.
Exactly.
And like nautical blazer.
Yeah.
That's, so it must be a little bit of the parents, but you must have contributed something too.
You know, I'll give you an honest answer. I think what really helped me in my life was when I lost my career. I went from performing at stadiums and arenas to half-filled high school gymnasiums.
Oh.
And just in a matter of a couple years.
And that was solo, or when you were with your brother?
Solo. And it really humbles you when, you know, there's hardly anybody out in the audience. So, and as you know, show business is such a roller coaster ride anyway. So the ups are great, the downs, you wish you were up again. And I was down there and I had to reinvent myself completely. And doing this solo show was risky for me.
Yeah, right.
Because you're coming out of a very successful duo, Donny and Marie here at the Flamingo. And then you're going to say, okay, I'm going to do my own show. Well, it's a completely different show. I mean, you've seen it.
Yeah.
It includes the Donny Marie history, the Osmond brother history, and the Donny Osmond history. So because of the downsides that I've experienced in my life, I appreciate everything I've got right now.
Yeah.
And so I think that the highs and lows are essential to appreciate what you've got.
To making a good person.
I think so.
Yeah.
I had
but it's all in how you deal with those downtimes. You know, you can be bitter,
right?
And or be grateful for the experiences that you're learning, and then rebuild yourself.
How? I mean, I've heard you talk about these, you know, down times a lot, like in the past before. Was it? Were you looking at financial ruin, or were you? Was it just like tough, or you know, how bad it was?
Well,
it?
I'm not going to say anything that's not out in the open anyway. It's been written about my financial ruin.
Right.
I think it's guesstimated about $80 million was squandered.
Oh my God!
And this is in 79, 80.
Oh.
And you just do the calculations of what those dollars mean in today's dollars,
mm-hmm.
and that humbles you big time. The fact that I didn't have any money, I didn't have a career, and I had four children at the time to raise and with my wife, and it's pretty scary.
This was by management or
advisors. You know, it's the typical show business debacle.
Yeah,
right.
Everybody says,
on.
"Oh, there's money trees. Let's just spend like crazy." And I remember a tour that like 92 people were on tour with us.
Oh.
92. And we had lasers and water effects and 12 dancers, and it was ridiculous. We came home owing money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. But you know what? If I did it again, shame on me.
Right.
So now I look at every single penny, every expenditure goes past me.
Yeah.
And not that I, you know, and I know it all. I'm not. I surround myself with some great people. But you have to be at the top. The buck stops here. And even in this show, you know, you have to scale it down because it's a smaller room. But what we've got, when people walk away, they say, how in the world did you fit that production on that stage?
Well, Micah, who works backstage for us and is sitting over there, has yet to see your show. And I said something behind your back that I would say to your face, it's the best show in Vegas.
Thank you.
It's
well, you're the best.
The
I'll be underneath
no,
you.
No.
But you haven't even seen the AI, have you?
No, I haven't.
Have you heard about it?
Yeah.
Have you heard about this, Paul?
No.
So
I haven't seen your show yet either. So me and Micah are going to come and see it.
Okay. So it was an idea I've had a long time ago. It took 2 years to make this thing. So I thought, okay, I'm sure the technology exists out there to where I can sing with myself.
Right.
So I was 14 years old when I recorded Puppy Love. I actually sing with my 14-year-old self on stage.
That's awesome.
It starts out, of course, I'm going to ruin it for those who haven't seen it. It starts out with the video, you know, the video wall on Audience Right.
Yeah.
Starts out with an old-fashioned 70s type film. 3, 2, 1, boop, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Clapperboard. It says, Donny Osmond, Puppy Love, 1972, something like that. And it comes up on the original recording session of me singing Puppy Love. And it's a false start, and you hear on the talkback, hey, Donny, do you want to take a break? And Donnie says, another guy. He says, yeah, just give me 5 minutes and we'll do another take. He turns to the audience or to the camera. He says, hi, I'm Donny Osmond. I'm recording a new song called Puppy Love. I'm going to release it soon. Hope you like it. Just then, I walk on stage and interrupt him and say, hi, Donny. And he looks down, hi, Donny. And we carry on a conversation. So he says, since you're here, do you want to sing Puppy Love with me? I said, you started. So he starts singing, and they called it Puppy Love. And we go through the song. And when we get to the chorus, I cry each night. The screen goes dark. Stage lights up. The curtains open up. And he's standing next to me.
Wow.
It's incredible. It's not a hologram. It's different technology.
Yeah.
I was talking about AI. I was talking to ChatGPT on my way here. I was like, tell me some things that I wouldn't know that I might surprise Donny with.
Interesting.
You know, and you are quite an early adopter of a lot of like in tech and even like social media with your fan base and stuff, right?
That's right.
In early days when people...
I heard Apple would call you when they had questions about their computers.
That's true.
That's true.
In fact, when we were here at the Flamingo, I pushed the envelope so far, and I called the Apple technicians. This is what I want to do with your computer. And they said, it's not possible. I said, oh, really? Hold on. So a couple weeks passed by and called them back up and said, it's working. And they came out and said, how are you doing this?
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had you and Apple, David Copperfield on some lighting desk. He apparently is an absolute master, and the lighting desk company calls him with questions. We have we have all this QLab stuff going on.
Yeah.
And like we bring in people, and then the company ends up calling those people to ask questions.
Yeah, QLab's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
I love it. That's so awesome. Yeah. So you're super into whatever.
Well, I've always been kind of a tech head.
Yeah.
Back in a long time ago, you probably guys don't probably know this company, Heathkit. They used to make these televisions and radios and stereos and stuff that you can actually build. Uh-huh. So I would build televisions and radios and walkie-talkies and stuff when I was in like 16, 15 right. years old. So I love that kind of stuff.
Now you, cool. But you've been in show business. I mean, I was trying to think back to when I was 5 years old and my memories of being five. And I'm like, oh my God, that's when you're starting. That's when your career is started there. So what was it like, just thinking about memories from that time right now?
The very first show?
Yeah.
It was at NBC in Burbank, Studio 4, Andy Williams show. And I came on, and there were these big boxes with these things called lenses on them. And there were three of them. And they said, when the red lights, there's two red lights underneath the lenses, when they're on, that means everybody can see you. And I'm 5 years old.
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, everybody can see me here in the studio. So I couldn't equate that millions of people were watching me. I've had just a couple hundred people here in the studio. They can see me, or maybe they can see me in the television monitor or something. So I did my gig, and a couple weeks after that, Andy took my brothers without me on a Christmas tour across the United States. And whenever they finished a show, they said, well, where's the Donnie kid? We want to see Donnie. So I don't know how he did it, but he talked my mom into putting me on the plane, because my dad was with my brothers, putting on a plane by myself.
5 years old.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
The thing that I remember about that plane is they gave me lobster tail on the plane.
What?
Boy, have
first
times
class.
Changed.
He was first
I was first class.
And they were smoking on that plane.
Exactly,
as well.
They were.
He's probably offering a lobster.
So I get to Chicago.
Was
I've
it
never
first
even
class?
Had
you
lobster
go,
tail.
Do you remember?
Was you better believe it was.
It was first class.
Yeah, I got spoiled right at five.
Oh, my God. Five-year-old Donnie.
That was your first flight?
My first flight.
First flight, first class.
Yeah,
talk
first
about
flight,
it.
First class.
Donnie Osmond only ever turns left.
This is
so
amazing.
I go to Chicago. I land there. My dad meets me at the airport. I go to the theater, and they want me to sing the same song that I sang on the television show. So I'm waiting in the wings. My brothers are out there with Andy, and Andy introduces me. And I run out, and the spotlight hits me. Completely blinds me. I don't know how many people are in front of me. I thought maybe a couple hundred people, like a recording studio. So I finish my number, and all these whistles and claps and hollers and all these flash bulbs going off scared me. Ran off stage. And the next thing I remember is hearing Andy say, Donnie, come back out here, take a bow. This is all for you. Boom. That was the moment.
Wow.
I got to do this the rest of my life.
Oh, really? I'm in.
I said, I'm in.
Wow.
That was the moment.
So 5 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, my memories are like falling over.
What's our first gig? So you think about that as your first gig, and I'm thinking about like my first gig was like doing a children's birthday party for like five kids that wanted to like just wreck my props. And
you know, I didn't do anything successful until I was about 31.
Really?
Everything was just bombing.
Well, I got to congratulate you for what you've done here. Because what you've established here in Vegas, I mean, everybody talks about, you got to see Piff. Got to see Piff. So congratulations, man.
Oh, thank you, Donnie. I appreciate that.
And give Jade my best.
Jade's the greatest. She's
got more energy than Heinz has pickles. It's just unbelievable.
She's kept me going so many times over the years. And I've heard you say the same about Debbie. When did you meet Debbie?
When she was five.
When she was five? Seven.
That was our first encounter.
Really?
We don't remember it, but I was performing with Andy in Billings, Montana, which is where she lived. And we were at the airport going home to Salt Lake City. And they happened to be at the airport because her uncle was coming in. And her grandpa said, oh, those are those little Osmond boys on the Andy Williams show. So they got our autographs, pictures, lost the pictures. But apparently we met at five. Then the next thing I know, I'm double dating with her. She was dating my brother.
She was dating
my brother Jay. And we went to an Elton John concert in Salt Lake City. And I remember, because I was dating this girl named Tammy. And I remember when Elton sat down. I told Elton this story as well. When he sat down and sang, it's a little bit funny, your song.
Yeah.
I remember looking over at my brother's date, thinking to myself, I'm going to marry that girl someday. And I did.
Wow.
I did. And here's the funny part. About 2 weeks later, after that date, Jay took out Tammy and I took out Debbie.
Oh, yeah.
We switched.
You switched around?
Yeah.
How, this is the first time you've ever thought, I'm going to marry that girl. Because if you're thinking that about every girl your brother dates, then it's no longer.
No, it was actually pretty real.
But that one you were like, this is it. I see
I
the light.
I started seeing something.
Just like 5 years old in Chicago.
How old would you be then when you guys at the Elton John?
16, 17.
Wow.
Because we dated for 3.5 years and I married when I was 20 and she was 19.
You dated for 3.5 years and that was all like when you're crushing it solo or with the...
Well, with the brothers.
With the brothers.
And so I had two careers going on at the same time. But we kept it quiet.
Right.
And dated for 3.5 years and then 47 years ago, I proposed in Hawaii.
Oh,
yeah.
Good place.
47 years
ago. And I'm still married to my first wife.
There you go.
Still working out.
I love that line. Yeah. I'm still married to my first wife.
I used to have a friend and he used to say... this is like Sylvia. She's my first wife. I call her that to keep her on her toes.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't really think Sylvia needs to be kept on her toes. I think she's doing enough work as it is dealing with you.
Have you met my current girlfriend? It's always a good one.
Oh. Yeah.
Won't she's great. Long, she mate. Came to the show.
I was lucky. I got a great one.
She came to the show. You were working. She brought your sons and grandsons along and all your children, offspring. And I felt, because you know, most of my show is shouting at small children.
Yeah.
And I felt a little bit guilty, but she was very kind to me afterwards. She said very nice things.
Do you know what I love about your show? Is how you portray how you're always angry on stage.
Right.
It's so funny.
But it's not that far from the truth.
Oh, it's really? He's a mean guy?
Terrible human being.
You've walked. I think Donny Osmond should be around more often because your charisma's gone through the roof since Donny turned up. Suddenly you're so positive about everything.
No, but it's so funny how your act is funny and you're mad. It's
but you know
so
that.
Cool.
But you know that before I had the dragon suit, that was my act, and I got fired everywhere for being a terrible human being. Like
now.
I did a magic at a small restaurant, and I walked up to a table, and I said hello, table of two. Do you want to see some magic tricks? And the guy stood up and he said, "My wife has just asked me for a divorce. Do you really think I want to see some heavy magic tricks?" Mm. And the whole place went silent. And I said, "I guess not, because she just made half your house disappear." And then I got fired immediately.
Fantastic.
So
and now, if you put a dragon suit on,
dragon outfit
that,
on that,
like,
hilarious. Oh, I've just that's made the whole divorce thing a lot more palatable.
That's brilliant.
But yeah, it was just that's why I spent 31 years unsuccessful.
When people are in on the joke, now they're like, "Do me."
Yeah,
it's like
right,
Don Rickles.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, come
it's
on,
definitely
do
Don
me
Rickles.
Now, do me
yeah.
now.
He's the new Don Rickles, exactly.
Yeah. But. You and Debbie, you get together. 3.5 years, you're dating.
Mm.
All the while you're on the road?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Thousands of screaming fans.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
I had her on speed dial.
What's that?
I had her on speed dial while I was performing.
Yeah?
Yeah,
it was. We had to keep it secret.
One of the things I'm grateful for with Jade, now... With Jay, this wouldn't apply because she's a fantastic person, actually, as I went on to find out over the years. But I met her at my lowest. so she had, there was nothing. There was nothing for her to go,
that's a surprise.
Here's this guy with lots of money and like lots of fame. Nothing.
Okay. The next question is, where and how did you meet her? She's not British.
No, I met her here when I was doing, I'd been doing this small part in this big show at the Cosmopolitan here that crashed and burned. 9 months went by. I was had no work. I was living in my friend's garage. Do you know Toby from Human Nature? Remember Human Nature?
I know, I know him. I can't place his face right now. I know,
Toby's a tall bass guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yes, I do.
So he was letting me live in his garage on a mattress.
You're kidding me.
And I did
Vegas garages are not cool
was
in
not
the
good.
Summer.
No.
It was not good.
That's
did you have any air conditioning?
No.
Oh
I did a gig
goodness.
With
great
Jade.
Place for a reptile.
Yeah. It was me and a bearded dragon.
Yeah.
And she was the female comic and I was the male comic. And all I did was hit on her for the entire thing.
Yeah.
And finally she said, "All right, here's my number." I took her out. it became clear she was living in a in this big penthouse apartment, not penthouse, like a one bedroom apartment at the Palms.
But a nice place.
Very nice place. Like a studio. It had a bath in the lounge. In the living room, there was a bath. A bath which cleaned itself.
Oh.
And I moved in about 3 weeks after meeting
her. Into the bath.
I moved into the bath.
You did not.
I did. And I was like, I'm not going back.
This
I'm not
is
going
a
back.
Brilliant story.
And she was fantastic. And then about 2 months later, I got the opportunity to audition on America's Got Talent. Then I had to go to Australia for a month. She looked after Piffles that whole time for a month. You know, we didn't know each other like, what was it, 6 or 8 weeks or something. And then suddenly everything blew up. And I was like, well, she was there when it was up, when I was at my lowest. She's going to be there no matter what.
That's a great story.
And, yeah, and you're there with Debbie 3.5 years of this madness. And she's sticking by you.
Yeah, and well, before but then, FaceTime.
And then, then everything drops.
Right.
And she was exactly like you. She was my support system.
Right.
I go out and trying to get a gig, yeah. trying to do anything, and come home to some stability. Because show business, as you know, you guys know, show business is a treacherous business.
It's a brutal business.
What so happened, brutal. Donnie? Why did things suddenly go quiet for you?
Well, it's a combination of a lot of things. I had a lot of time to think about this. Timing is everything. When you have a teeny bopper career, that ends when you're about 14, 15 years old, because the audience grows up and they thought, okay, or they think, everything I liked and everyone I liked when I was 12, 13, 14 years old is for little kids.
Yeah.
Well, it's human nature, but they just don't think about the fact that, well, they grew up too.
Right. Yeah.
But it's just not cool to like what you liked when yep. you were a little teeny bopper. So my 18, 19... went into the Donnie and Marie show, which kind of circumvented that whole dynamic, created a whole different career for me. And when that went down, it all went down. Then I got married, and so I'm not an eligible bachelor anymore. So it was the perfect storm for everything to just change. And I remember 1985, I cut ties with everything. I moved from Utah to Los Angeles, moved to Irvine, and I said, I got to reinvent myself completely. And I was singing demos for people and just trying to get a gig, anything. And slowly but surely, because I realized you can't just get the audience back. You got to get the industry back.
Yeah.
And Ooh. Then you can get the audience back. There's two factors.
Right.
So that's why I would do demos. And then people at the recording labels would hear this and say, wow, that's kind of cool. He can really sing. But the image is getting in the way. That yeah. happened to me. All the time. Quincy Jones was about ready to sign me secretly and do something with Michael. And in the 11th hour, he said, can't do it. Just, I had all these things. In the 11th hour, it all fell apart constantly until I recorded a song called Soldier of Love. And you want to hear how that became a hit?
Yeah.
I'll give you the quick story. Peter Gabriel and I did a show together for UNICEF in New York. And we were backstage, and he said, so what's going on with your career? Because I really like your voice. I don't really like your music at the beginning, but, you know, what's happening to your career? And I told him exactly what's going on. He said, I want you to come over to the UK, and we're going to record some stuff together, and we're going to get you a deal on Virgin Records. So he had to twist everybody's arm. We released a bunch of stuff. Nothing really worked. And that finally went to the wayside. An import copy from one of my fans made it to WPLJ in New York and gave it to Jessica Ettinger. She was the music director. She said, I love this song, but I can't play Donny Osmond because they're the number one pop station. Can't play Donny Osmond, but I'm going to test it. I'm going to play it without saying who it is. They started testing it. It became the number one requested record in New York City.
Huh.
So as I flew home from the UK, just totally depressed. And my manager at the time says, Donnie, I got some good news and some bad news. I said, I don't need any bad news. Give me some good news. He said, you have the number one requested song in the number one market in the United States. I said, what could be bad? He said, nobody knows it's you. Now, they want to just tell everybody who this is. I was afraid to tell them who it was because I thought I would just completely destroy all the requests. That was right. Donny Osmond, never mind. So I flew in after about 2 weeks of this record building in New York, and they secretly brought me into the studio because they built it up big time that the mystery artist is going to reveal himself. I'll never forget, it was drive time on a Friday. Everybody's listening. And the drum roll, the whole bit, says, mystery artist. Oh, by the way, before I say that, do you remember the telephones we used to have with all the buttons that would light up?
The switchboards.
Switchboards, yeah. Okay. They had like 20 in right. this, and nothing was on. Mystery artist, what's your name? I said, it's Donny Osmond. Every button lit up. It was unbelievable. It blew up the lines. So now all the radio stations all across the country want to do the same thing. This is before social media. You yeah. couldn't do it today.
Right, yeah.
So I'm flying all over the place, all over the country doing
this
mystery.
Oh, because they all want to do the big reveal.
They want to do the big reveal wow. because it was such a cool promotion.
Yeah.
And went all the way to the top of the charts, and that's what brought me back.
Right.
Wow.
And then Sacred Emotion was a hit, the follow-up was a hit, and immediately went into Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat after that.
Yeah.
Everybody thought I was crazy. You've worked 10 years to get back on the charts, and you're changing? Because I thought in my mind, because I've been in the business a while, you got to keep reinventing yourself, because the record thing is going to die a little bit.
Yeah.
And everybody say, it's over. So I did another thing, kind of like the same dynamic when the Teeny Bopper curve started going down and I went to the Donnie and Marie show, created mm-hmm. another, I think it's called the S-curve. I created that S-curve with Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Supposed to be 6 months, went on for 6 years.
Wow.
Anyway, that is a brief, quick story of how it all came back.
But then you go into the Joseph show, and I assume that when you started it, you had not done anything like that before?
Well, good question. Almost exactly 10 years prior to that, when things started, we lost all of our money.
Yeah.
The career was kind of waning a little bit. I thought, okay, I'm going to go to Broadway and be a Broadway star. So I did a show called Little Johnny Jones. You guys, we opened and closed the same night.
No!
Ouch, baby.
We're working on a Broadway show.
Be careful.
Snatching the sandwich out of your sardines.
Opening and closing night.
The same night.
Our Broadway show is based on a show called Merlin, which is a big flop. But what they did, they just stayed in previews so that they could burn a lot more money. And then eventually they opened and closed on the same night.
Oh, that's a great. Yeah. Well, that's my life.
Yeah.
You might remember I do a rap. You got to see the rap that I do in the show. It's 6 decades of show business in 10 minutes. And because I thought, I got to do something kind of like Hamilton. Everything's in
right,
rhyme.
Right.
It all began back in Utah. I was 4 years old. Started singing with my brothers and the sound was like gold. So my folks took a leap and said, what the hey? We got to get these monsters out to California. And it gets faster and faster. And everything I say, you actually see visually. And I include the flop on Broadway.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got to have the yin and the yang, you know?
That's the standing ovation instantly.
Oh, it's...
When you do that rap.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Broadway one, when... Open and close on the first night, but you did some previews.
I did some previews, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You did 8 shows a week?
8 shows a week. That's the Broadway schedule.
And you were like, okay, I can do this.
Oh, yeah.
No problem. How long did you do it for, like a month or two?
Three weeks.
3 weeks?
3 weeks. We went to Boston, went to Washington, D.C., and then came and did a week of preview, and then they pulled the rug out.
Right. Oh, God.
But then you're thinking, okay, so I've done Broadway. I know what's going on.
Let me just stop you 1 second, okay? Just back on the closing night. This is how horrible closing night was. But it makes me feel good, though. We stopped the show 3 times for standing ovations.
Oh.
And then they pulled the plug. I mean, it was that good of a show.
Why did they pull the plug then?
Well, the guy had a problem with Frank Rich. Remember Frank Rich?
No.
So Frank Rich had a problem with Donny Osmond and just panned it. And Jimmy Niederlander, who was my producer, he said, he has too much power, can't buck it. Pink slip.
It's like Kate Copstick.
But it was such a successful opening night.
Wow.
3 times we had to just wait and for people to sit back down.
Oh, and you're there on stage going, this is it. This is it. We're back.
We figured it out. And then the next morning, you're fired.
What does it actually feel like? Because for me, when I've had those times, it's just like, I want to be sick. I feel like everything's closing in. I'm like, oh, there's no way forward ever again from this. Do you feel like that? Or is there some part of you going, okay, I see this in the bigger picture?
No, it was devastating.
Yeah.
The word that comes to my mind is embarrassing.
Right.
Because, you know, a lot of people... outside show business who don't have notoriety, when they make a mistake, they just cover it up and close it in the history books, right? Mm. No, mine, we're still talking about it. It's like 50 years ago or whatever.
I it's really interesting when you were just talking about that, because the thing you were saying about the record making it, and then the issue was the name. Like, it's so personal, Donnie. So suddenly you're dealing with yourself as a brand or as a industry.
We're a brand.
And it's the bit that they hate is the bit that's most personal to me, and it's because of my success beforehand. It's interesting, when we had Carrot Top in before, and he was talking about kind of, you know, being made fun of here, there, and I'm like, and yeah, and that the reason that you are also the butt of a particular joke is because you're so successful as well.
Right.
And it's such a weird,
interesting,
it's such a weird kind of hypocrisy.
That's a perfect word for it, hypocrisy. But if you can embrace it, which is thankfully I've been able to do. Let's back up a few years. Before Soldier of Love took place, I was over at Michael Jackson's place. And I said, Mike, how do I get back on the charts? Do you know what he told me? He said, your name is poison.
Ooh.
And said, what? No, I said, what?
What?
Yeah.
And he said, no, your name is poison. You got to reinvent yourself. You got to come out with a new name.
Wow.
Yeah. So in a way, he was right.
Right.
When Soldier of Love hit, they played it without my name. They did me a favor.
Now,
but you're so right.
Did you release something in the UK with another name, Bad Boy, or
no?
There was not a
ChatGPT thing.
ChatGPT screwed up on part number two.
I asked ChatGPT so many questions about.
I wanted to surprise
about
Donny
my
Oddman,
career now,
Osmond.
Because it just makes up anything you want to hear.
Well, yeah. It was right on the last.
It just makes it up.
Yeah. Well, there's all kinds of memes on the line about me coming back with Marie and doing a final tour with my brothers and all this. And it's not true.
Did you turn down Gaston in Beauty and the Beast?
No, I actually did Gaston.
You did do Gaston?
Oh, I played Gaston. In fact, there was one night where Gaston forces a kiss onto Belle, and Belle slaps me. By the way, my wife loved that scene. So she slaps me, and somebody in the audience says, I love you, Donnie! Laugh, laugh, laugh. What do? I'm in character. Do I keep going? So I stopped. I love you too, baby! And jumped off the stage. Ran out, gave her a big hug. The audience is going crazy because you don't see that, you know?
Right.
Especially in a show like you don't break the fourth wall.
Yeah.
I jump back on stage, get back in character, and we finish the show. At the end of the show, we're all taking our curtain call. I come out, plaza, applause, applause, take a bow, curtain comes down, stage manager walks up to me. And he says, if you ever jump off the stage again, don't come back. I thought he was kidding. He said, I'm serious. So the producer found out about it, and he lost his job. I said, guys, we're not curing cancer here.
Right.
This is show business. It's fun. And in that kind of a moment, and I can take advantage of it because
you
make a choice. And being who I am, they all know I'm Donny Osmond. I'm not just a character.
Right.
Take advantage of it.
Right.
Use it. Utilize it. Have fun with it.
Have you ever heard the story about, have you worked with Brian Connolly? Do you know who I mean? Back in the UK?
Yes.
Comedian Brian. Very funny guy.
Yes.
And he used to have a TV show. And one of the catchphrases of one of the characters he used to do was, it's a puppet.
It's a puppet.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's doing the Al Jolson story, the musical, and he's in Canada doing it, and he's in the big scene about mommy and all this sort of stuff, and suddenly in this big dramatic moment in Canada, one person up on the balcony shouts at him, it's a puppet. And of course, it's Canada. Nobody knows it's a puppet over there. So it's like one Brit that shouts. So he can't even acknowledge it or anything. I thought it was just, you've got to be careful with those catchphrases. They'll follow you around.
But what did he do? He didn't do anything about it?
No, because the audience didn't know what that even meant. Because they're Canadian, not British.
Right.
But so it's one Brit calling it out.
You have to do something.
Yeah.
You have to acknowledge it. Because everyone's thinking it.
Right.
I love hecklers in the audience.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Because I just, like, for instance, we do a 20-minute segment, the request segment, where I put all my 65 albums on the screen, and the audience then takes over for 20 minutes and controls what we do on stage. They could pick any song I've ever recorded.
Oh, like a jukebox.
Yeah.
I love it.
And so it's a free-for-all, and people are yelling out stuff, and it's so much fun.
But that's what keeps it fresh, right?
I've got a question about this section. Because I've heard something unbelievable.
Mm.
That I think maybe it's doable, but I don't believe it. when the 65 albums, right? Mm-hmm. Like 10, 12 tracks an album. Mm-hmm. Audience can say any track. Then the band get their music via an QLab, iPad, all, like program, mm-hmm. all comes up. They start playing. Boop. Okay. I heard you get the song like a little bit earlier, whatever the musical term is. You know, where do you get the lyrics from?
I don't get the lyrics, and I don't want the lyrics because I want it to be real. Last night, somebody asked for a song we had never done before, and you guys, I don't even remember recording it. So, I mean, it didn't come back to me. It started playing, and
I
sat down to listen to it.
So, what you're doing is more impressive than because I thought I'll tell you how earlier, and then like singing it. Back. And somehow you were just like keeping the two things going.
No. So I'll tell you exactly how it works. Pull the curtain back and see.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
Exclusive.
This is exclusive.
This is a Donny Osmond Piff the Magic Dragon exclusive right now.
So if you said sing, immortality. Just say sing. Say that, Donny. Sing.
Donny, sing immortality.
Immortality. I just repeated what you just said. So Glenn in the booth hears immortality, finds it on the computer, hits it, and as soon as he hits it, I hear what's called a pre-click. And if I hear that pre-click, I know the tempo. That's all I know. And I know as soon as that click happens, they can see the music. I give them 3 to 5 seconds to scan it, and we start.
Beep, boop, boop, boop.
And when
beep,
I was auditioning musicians,
love it.
They had to be able to sight read.
Right.
Right.
Because of that segment of the show.
Now, that's hard to get musicians that can sight read but are also good performers too. You know, I've worked with musicians that are great sight readers, but that's what they're great technicians, great sight readers, and musicians that are amazing on stage.
Yep.
Getting the two together is tough,
it's
right?
It's very tough. I went through so many great musicians, but I wanted to watch them and say, do I enjoy watching them on stage? And my dancers are the same way. Do I enjoy watching? Are they having fun on stage? Because, I may be the star of the show, but everybody is on stage.
And the audience love to see chemistry between you guys.
My band, that's such a great band. And everyone is just having so much fun on stage. My drummer, my music director, Earl Campbell, when he auditioned, I just looked at him and said, he's a show in and of himself. Every single one of them is a show in and of himself.
But I think they probably really appreciate those moments of doing fun new stuff or being on your toes because you play the same show night in, night out.
It is our favorite part of the show.
Yeah.
Because it changes.
Yeah.
We don't know what's coming up for 20 minutes.
Fun.
It's 20 like minutes.
Rolling the dice, baby.
It's so great.
The first time I did it, I was scared half to death.
Right.
I was like, what's going to happen? What do I say? And all that stuff. And now I can hardly wait for that segment to come up.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what's going to happen.
There must be songs you still haven't played yet.
There are some songs,
Well, and the thing is as well, all the hits, all the ones that people are expecting are already in the show. So, you know.
Not really.
There's a lot of stuff not in the show.
There's too much. Yeah. This is a crazy thing. This is too much. This 65 albums.
My friend saw Prince in, he did like this one night in Ronnie Scott's in London, which is a little 80s jazz club. They did this very secret like one night and people queued for tickets. And my friend got to see it. And he walks out, he does his first song and he goes, oh, there's just so many hits. We just don't have time. And he goes, boom, you don't have to be straight
beautiful.
Into it. It was like, oh, I don't know if we've got time. Boom. And it was just like,
that's
killer.
Fantastic.
And when they're waiting for that number and it just.
Yep.
Donnie sung Puppy Love to Mr. Piffles. Oh. And I said to Donnie, do you need to sound check? And he said, I've sung it enough.
In this theater.
I think I know the words. In this theater,
in this
exactly.
theater, with this sound guy.
Yeah.
I think I'm fine.
By the way, speaking of that, when Puppy Love first came out, I had sung it, four times in the studio? That's it. That's all I did.
Yeah.
It was released, and these little young teenagers were listening to it, I don't know, 100 times a day. Radio stations pumping it like crazy. They know the song. And I remember going out on tour, and my brother Alan says, and Donnie, here's Puppy Love. Dun, 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 screaming like crazy. And they called it Puppy Love, screaming like crazy. In the Ferdy and just do.
Oh, no.
Called it Team Bop. And nobody knew the difference. There were so many screams.
They were just screaming so loud.
Yeah, they're screaming
so loud. And they knew it so well.
I didn't know the words. I just knew, and they called it Showbiz. Puppy Love, and that's all I remember.
Have you had that? Have you had that? Is that a common thing, or you, where you just sort of like all the words go from you?
No, not really.
No, not really. No. So that was like a very weird.
Oh, that. Well, no, because I didn't know the song.
Oh, you didn't know the song?
Because I only sang it three times.
That's crazy.
I just didn't know the words.
Yeah. And nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to hide.
Nowhere to hide.
No monitor with the words on. Oh my goodness.
That's the one thing I'm grateful for, you know, being a comedian is technically there is no script. It is whatever I say next, technically. Right. And some days I've been like, I wonder what I did used to say here for the last 1,000 times I've done this trick.
Yeah.
Because it's not what I'm saying now.
Yeah.
Because I don't really know what's happening.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh. And sometimes that's a dangerous thing because you think I can do this, get funnier and funnier. Jerry Lewis taught me that. He said, trust the work.
Right.
Trust the script. Because, yeah, you might want to change a little bit here and there and tweak. But the problem with comedy is that if you don't get as big of a laugh today as you did yesterday, you think something's wrong with the script.
Right.
And then you start changing things to the point where it's not funny anymore.
Yeah.
You overdo it.
Yeah.
Well, of course, I'm preaching to the choir there, but.
Well, I've been not funny many times. Many times I've managed to make something hilarious not funny.
Yeah.
Do you find that, you know, being in Vegas when you did Joseph, you're doing a lot of performances a week. Does that help you? Is that you get in the groove? Or do you have to focus to stay in the groove?
I always focus, yeah. Regardless of how long I've been off. Because one thing I've learned over the years is that when you hit the stage, there's somebody in the audience who's watching you for the first time.
Yeah.
So treat it like the first show or your last show. And it's difficult, as you well know, when you're doing the same thing, it's redundant. But Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat gave me a lot of great discipline. Because Andrew Lloyd Webber wants his stuff done a specific way. Don't change it. And 8 shows a week for 6 years, you're digging to the bottom of the barrel.
And he has been known to waltz in and fire everyone on a whim.
Oh,
even,
yes.
Even famous
I
people.
I got a story for you. Opening night, Joseph, Toronto, in 1992, my conductor, he would slap me all the time. He said, don't change the... Because before we know... combining two different stories here. On Close Every Door, sorry, my mind is going way too fast. On Close Every Door, for we know we shall find. I added that note. It wasn't written.
Oh.
And Paul Reno, my conductor, says, stop it. And Andrew Lloyd Webber is there opening night. And all the news cameras in the back row and all this kind of stuff. Nerves like you can't imagine. And I get to the very end of the show, and I'm singing Close Every Door, and I'm looking at Paul Reno, and he's like, don't you do it, don't you do it. And I'm getting to, for we know we shall find. I went for it. And if looks could kill, I'd be dead, right? My own peace of mind, blah, 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 blah. Finish the show, applause, 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 standing ovation. I did something you don't do in theater. Until you get permission, particularly to Andrew Lloyd Webber. I invited him to come up on stage to take the curtain call with us. You always get permission. I didn't get permission. He comes up on stage. My narrator's here. Andrew Lloyd Webber is standing between us, and I'm right here. We take a bow. He turns to me and he says, where have you been keeping that voice all these years?
Huh.
I went and told Phil Reno that.
Yeah.
And then after the show, he came back to my dressing room. And he walks up to me and says, you know, Donnie, sorry, I don't do a good accent. I didn't write that note in Close Every Door. I said, I know, I'm so sorry. He says, but I like it. Keep it in.
Oh, great.
So if anybody ever sings that note, that's my note, baby.
Because he's famous for some faces.
Oh, my goodness.
There's some great footage of, like, Lloyd Webber in the audience of places where someone's singing one of his songs and maybe he's not such a fan, and yeah. They'll do the thing, you know, where they pan to.
Yeah.
And
oh yeah, 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 yeah.
It's just fabulous.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
No,
and that was the discipline for doing a. It's one thing doing a solo show, but the discipline for being a main character in a show like that, where you've got so many other people.
Yeah.
Well, also you're not the boss.
Right.
You know, you've got people to answer to.
That's exactly right.
When it's like, you know.
You're a hired gun. Right. Yeah. That's all you are. And you your name keep... may be on the marquee.
Well, and but... especially if your name's on the marquee and you're well-known elsewhere, you're a commodity too, right? You're that's helping sell tickets. So the responsibility is very high on you.
You got to do the interviews. You've got to do the press, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And do the things in the community.
Did you have many, like, was it one of these where I imagine your understudy was furious that they never got to go on?
They went on.
They went on. There were some.
There were times.
Because that's a tough gig.
Because I went through a lot of anxiety. I had stage fright.
Really?
During the Joseph era. And there were moments where I couldn't go on stage because of social
after
anxiety.
All these years.
You'd think, why would I have social anxiety?
Was it more so? It was more social anxiety than stage fright, but it was becoming stage fright?
It was
fright?
Both stage fright.
Did you ever get to the bottom of why you had it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, and I've talked to a lot of professionals about this, I think it was the fact that I had an amazing career at a young kid, and I lost it. I went through, I told you the climb back, and I get Soldier of Love and Sacred Emotion hit big time, and I started Joseph, and it got to the point that it was such a powerful show that I was getting standing room only in these, and I forget, it was in Minneapolis at the State Theater on Hennepin Avenue, and they announced half hour to showtime, and I start shaking because they said it's standing room only.
Just the odds were so high.
Well, not only that, is that if I didn't give a perfect show, people would say it's not that good, and I'd lose my career again.
Yeah.
And I know what it feels like to be down. And I think that's what happened. And then, you guys, I would walk on stage knowing that I would die. And the only way you can explain it to somebody who hasn't ever had social anxiety is that you're standing in the middle of an intersection and a big semi is headed your way and you can't get out of the way. Or you're in a burning building and you can't get out.
When I was a kid, I used to go on vacations with my family and I would leave my house for the last time because I was convinced we were going to die on the journey.
I'd be
saying goodbye to the cat, you know, like looking one last time at my bed.
This is it.
Yeah.
I'm never coming back.
Never coming
back. And it's unrealistic, but that's what I went through going out on stage and knowing that I would die, but I would still go on and do the show.
Well, and the now knowing the kind of biology behind that, the cortisol and so the toll that physically takes on you from some, because you're living in fight or flight all the time.
That's exactly right.
Even though it's not going to happen. That's insane.
What was your reaction? Was because like my reaction when it's like flight, was it fight or flight or freeze?
Yeah,
that's the other one. And mine's always freeze.
Oh,
I always just look up and I'm like, oh, this is not helpful at all. This is not going to help with whatever the situation is happening. For you, what was it? Was
freeze.
It was freeze as well.
Yeah.
It's I'm just gonna tell Paul something and the viewer at home. Like when we came back from the pandemic, I had an awful time with anxiety because I had all this pressure. You know, we moved into the big room here and we had to sell a certain number of tickets and everybody was coming back and all of this stuff was going on. And I reached out to you to shoot a video. Remember this? Yeah. I was like, hey, let's shoot a video together. And you were like, great, let's do it. And then I went quiet for a long time, like maybe 6 months. And then we came to see your show and you said to me, why haven't we shot that video? And I was a bit like, And the next day I texted you, actually, it's because like I've had like crippling anxiety for the last like 6 months. And you said, I'm coming over. Remember this? And you came over and we talked through all this and you really helped me get through that period in my life.
I didn't think you'd bring this up, but you know what? I'm so proud of you.
Oh.
Do you know why?
Why?
The thing that was so cathartic for me was telling people about it.
Right.
Not hiding it.
Right.
And the fact that you just said that, I'm so proud of you, man. Because it is crippling. For those of you who've never gone through this, it's kind of like, come on, snap out of it. You can't snap out of it.
It's like walking on a broken ankle.
Yeah, it's like telling someone that's depressed to cheer up.
Oh, you can't.
Like, you'd make it worse.
Yeah, you do make it worse. But the fact that you pulled out of it is such a testament to you because I know how hard it is. And the thing is, what I got through is embrace it. As soon as you push it away, it will push back harder. But as soon as you embrace it, it has nowhere to go but away.
Well, and exactly that, talking about it, the more people that do talk about that sort of thing, the less of a monster under the bed it is. You know?
Exactly.
For
exactly
sure.
Right.
But that's why you, I was...
I'm so glad you told me, because at that point of time, I was dealing with life so well.
You were crushing it in the pandemic.
I was crushing it. Piff had taken... I was like a broken bird that had fallen out of its nest.
I think so, maybe.
Oh,
really?
Remember? Oh, I came to work for Piff during the pandemic whilst we were coming back here and help with the show. And I was so full of anxiety and heartbreak that some days I was just like, I can't bill for my day of work here today because I've spent most of it crying out on your patio.
See, you know what? There's a common thread right yeah. here. And you know what it is? People in show business, this is my theory, I don't know how if it holds water, but people in show business, because it's such a demanding business, we have to be perfectionists because right. there's somebody in the wing ready to take over our spot.
Right.
And so you've got to be the best you can be 100%, 110% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that can take its toll on you because sometimes you're going to make mistakes on stage. And this is what one thing I've learned is that you embrace the mistakes. There was a moment at the Flamingo. I was doing Moon River, wider than a mile, a tribute to Andy. And I went, Moon River. Stop the show. Ladies and gentlemen, you paid good money to hear me sing, and I just cracked the note. We're going to do it again. Moon, we can start again. Moon River. Stop the show. I'm going to do it again. Third time. Moon River. And the crowd was yeah. with me. Because I embraced it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I made a mistake and I'm owning it,
right?
baby.
Well, it's like, that is, you. If you look at like the epitome of, you know, someone, not in a toxic way, being a man and, you know, somebody that you respect doing, it's owning your mistakes is part of it. Have you ever seen the footage of Springsteen doing You Never Can Tell?
No.
So they do requests in their huge stadium yeah. tour, and somebody's like, you know, c'est la vie, c'est the old folks who go to show, they never can tell, is what they want them to play. And you watch in front of 50,000 people, the band kind of busk it out and work it out, and they're like, okay, we're about to get, like, this is in the concert. Okay, let's go. And he starts singing, and he's picked a key too high.
Oh, no.
And you watch the boss... sit there going, no, it's not that one. We're and like, I'm not a musician, but you would watch it and you go, oh my God, look at him. And he's yeah. there with the guys and everything, sounding like shit, but yeah. knowing he is, it's not in his range. Like, no, we're going to find it. There's like 50,000 people there, and
oh
then they
God.
Play the socks off it, and it's just fantastic. But they start the song and realize it's the wrong key or whatever, and it's like, that's cool
okay.
when you can walk out in front of the audience and do that.
Here's the cynicism in me. It was produced.
Maybe.
Could be. But sorry, pull the rug out from underneath.
No.
You, but even if it's produced.
Well, I mean, I've done
people,
Panto.
It's you real.
Know, you know a good corpse. They love a good corpse.
And what do you mean by that?
You know, when you make somebody crack up on stage.
We call
it a corpse.
I haven't heard that.
So often you'll put one in the show. So, you know, the dame will turn to the comic and go, well, have you? And then you'll crack.
Right.
And the audience... because of the camaraderie. They're
exactly.
like, ah, oh, but obviously
they're seeing something
often
very
rehearsed.
Real.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had a moment the other day in my show where I found a woman came up to the microphone and I said, what's your name? And she said, Nelly. And I said, oh, like the elephant. Because in the UK,
okay.
there's a famous song called Nelly the Elephant.
Yeah.
Now.
Not famous
it would have been okay if I'd have just stopped there and gone, oh, that was a weird thing to say, but there's a song called that in the UK. I decided... that I needed to play the song. So I started Googling it.
On stage?
On stage.
On stage. To prove that there was a song called Nelly the Elephant.
Oh, no.
And all of the Nelly the Elephant songs on Google were the American version or something, which sounds nothing like the one that I was singing.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm just apparently pretending Triple. That there's this song in the UK that everyone yeah. knows.
Having then just called a woman an elephant.
An elephant.
Great.
Then I start singing it.
It's not that you're big. You've just got a big nose. Is that what it...
Then there's a bunch of people from England, and I say, I'm right. There's a song. And they
please,
kind of disown me.
Please tell me they threw you under the bus.
And honestly, I just had to stop talking and move on.
How did you recover?
There was no recovery.
It's
there
not what it
no
looks like.
There was no recovery from it. I just called a woman an elephant, and then she said, by the way... And she got chosen to be on stage with me for the rest of it. She got chosen to come up. She's like, I have to come up now. And I said, yeah. And she said, but I have social anxiety. And I said, well, this is going to make it a lot worse.
Come here and come. Slap a Jello. Is that what it was for, yeah. The Apple Watch?
Yeah. And I was just like, but it was not a triumphant, the audience joined in with me on the third attempt.
But you have
it was
those. I mean, woof. Yeah, look back. It makes for a great story.
Yeah.
So embrace it. Love it.
You did 1,730 performances, I believe.
At the Flamingo.
Not the Flamingo. At the Donny and Marie showroom, as it was
called that.
Called when you were there. How did it feel doing that? Did you have a great time? You know, because you came off it. I heard you did some shows at the MGM Grand.
And that's where it all started.
Right. They went so well. They were like, hey, you got to.
Yeah, we did 10 shows at the Grand. And I remember coming over here and seeing the showroom, and I said, Marie, you got to come see this. And we looked at it and we said, this is where we're going to reunite. This is it.
Such a great room.
And it's the greatest room.
It's a great room.
It is. Very I don't good. Think there is, most of those good rooms are gone. I love that room. I love the one at the Plaza.
Yeah.
That's it. Those
Have
those
you seen
great.
My room?
It's Harris.
It's 500, maybe 600.
Yeah, yes. But that's it. I've not been to an evening show. No, only ever seen.
You have to see
there.
It now.
Oh yeah, we redid the whole thing. It was kind of dilapidated.
I gotta come see it
when we first walked in.
I'm gonna take Micah.
But it's all repainted. The whole lighting and the sound, everything is all different. But I like that room because, like the request segment, the whole audience feels like we're right there.
Yeah,
I love that. Showroom Vegas showroom feel booths. It's so it's so rare now, and it's
do you want to hear a good story about booths?
Yes.
Frank Sinatra, ready?
Yeah,
we're ready.
So in the rap I do a little piece when I did a thing with Nancy Sinatra at Caesars, okay, and during dress rehearsals the day of the opening, everybody's running around, we're running late, and everybody's just, the only people allowed in the showroom, in the booth, was Frank Sinatra and his bodyguards. So everybody on stage, the stagehands, they're swearing up a storm, and like sailors, and using the F-bomb, okay, and I'm 9 years old. My dad is stage left, and he's witnessing all this. He knows that Frank could stop this, right? But he didn't do anything about it. My dad walks in the audience, walks up to Frank, and proceeds to rip him apart. And you know those moments where the words just come off your tongue, mm-hmm. right? He was just ripping him up. Why don't you stop this? His guard started to get up. He was going to beat him up.
Right.
And Frank says, let him speak his piece. So my dad finishes, walks off. The next day, my dad is setting props backstage left. This guy named Guido, whatever his name is, right? He walks up behind my dad and says, are you George Osmond? My dad turns around and says, yeah, who wants to know? He says, Frank's got a little present for you. Reaches in his coat pocket like he's going to pull out a gun. He pulls out an envelope. He said, Frank wanted you to have this. So he walks off. My dad opens it up. Now, this is 1968. The value of a dollar back then is different than it is today. $1,000 cash. With a handwritten note from Frank apologizing for not taking care of the situation.
Oh.
Frank never apologized.
Right.
But here's the crime. My dad puts the money in his pocket and throws the letter away.
No!
Can you imagine the value of that letter?
Right, yeah.
Now, here's the best part of the story. My dad told me this when he was on his dying bed. And I said, Father, how come you never told me this story until now? He said, just Frank Sinatra.
It's just Frank Sinatra.
It's just Frank Sinatra.
Well, that's why he could rip him a new one.
Yes, it was just, it. It's just
that's
Frank.
That's the reason.
Wow.
Yeah, my
apologies. But can you imagine the value of a signed letter from the chairman of the board?
Apologizing.
Jeez.
It's in a landfill someplace.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Tell me, because you obviously have had a long career here, and you came to Vegas, you must have played Vegas when you were very young first.
I started seven. At Sahara.
Wow. At Sahara, mm-hmm. when you were seven?
Wow.
I was with Mickey Rooney and Shirley Bassey.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dame Shirley. Oh. Best performance, performer, show. If you could bring something back, one show or one performance or something that you saw here in Vegas, who was it?
Elvis. At the Hilton, when it was called the Hilton.
Yeah.
No, it was at the International before the Hilton. And I was in the audience. And Ronnie Tutt on drums, the band was going crazy. It was just like on fire. And he was up there doing his thing, you know. And then he did this really cool thing. he stepped off the stage while the band was vamping, stage right, and he walked through the audience and people pulling him like crazy and pulling his scarf off and pulling his hair as it took like 15 minutes to get around to stage left and back up on the stage. It was magical. We opened the next night. And
you opened here the next night?
No, we opened at the International.
Oh, okay. He was on that night. You go to the next night.
The next night. And he came in 10 minutes before the show started. And he says, "Hello, everybody. I'm Elvis Presley." And I remember thinking, "Yeah, we all know you don't need to introduce yourself, right?"
Right.
And it was just such a sweet man. He leaves. We go on stage, and during this one segment of mine, I turned to the band. I said, "Guys, give me a vamp," because we had the same outfits: the big collars, mm-hmm. the scarf, the mm-hmm. whole bit. Same designer, Bill Ballou, designed his outfits, designed our outfits. So I went to stage right. And I walk down while they're vamping, and the little teenage girls, they're pulling on me. They're pulling my scarf. I'm Elvis Presley. And I walk back up. It didn't take me 15 minutes, maybe a minute, right? And after the show, my dad says, "Don't you ever do that again." And I looked at him. I said, "But it worked, didn't it?" And he said, "Yeah, do it again tonight." Yeah.
Just like that stage manager. What have we learned? Donnie cannot stay on the stage.
No, I cannot. I've got to get off the stage. Yes.
Wow.
So I would bring back that show that I saw that Elvis did.
Yeah. I'm so sad to be here now. No, I love living in Vegas, but like just to have been around at that time.
It was magical.
It's just so... And I have some... older neighbors where I live in a very old neighborhood here in Vegas, and I just love the stories, and it's so I wish there was a bit more of it preserved.
Well, you know, it's nice to be go back and hold on to those memories, but I must say that I love Vegas for what it is now. Yes, it's going up and down, and you know, people may have bad opinions and good opinions, but I look at the technology. Now, a lot of people use a little too much technology, but if you do it right and you give them a real show and you give them real comedy, you know, where they can legitimately laugh, I love today's atmosphere. Yes, I will agree with you. It was great back then, but I think it's even better now because of the quality. Now, I will say there was a show, it's going to go nameless. They romanced me to do a lot. They had me fly in 3 different times to watch this different incarnations of the show. And I won't give you an idea of what it was. But they said, "We really want you to star in this." I watched it and I walked out after the show. I said, "I can't do it. It's just not right for me." A year later, boom, do it again. A year later, do it again. I can't do it. And here's why. They threw so much money at this show. The effects were over the top. It was unbelievable.
I know what show it is already.
And don't even say a word. but I said, it's like eating a big meal and walking away from the table and still being hungry.
Mm.
And so it really was a good thing for me to see that and experience that, because it really helped me produce this show, because you got to have this in the show. You got to hit them with the production. That's why I say I love what we can do today with the lighting and the video and the AI. And then bring it way down.
Exactly.
I do a song on there, Start Again, from the new album. It's just me and the piano.
Yeah.
And a mic and a spotlight. That's it. And when you can do that yin and yang, that, in my opinion, that's the ingredient of a good show.
Yeah. I think it's having that, it's just because you've got all those bells and whistles,
you don't
overuse
them. Exactly. Yeah.
It's having the discipline of you of having that and then pulling it back and then having that spotlight moment or that old school moment and then exactly.
Well, it's like pushing the pleasure button. You keep pushing it. You have to keep pushing harder.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was where your pleasure button was.
Well, it is now. I'm never gonna wash again. But you could say, you know, Donnie, just listen to you there, Vegas is very similar to yourself. It reinvents itself all the time and embraces what's going on. You know, it's embracing sports. It's embracing what we've got going on at the Sphere now. It's embracing the technology or whatever.
Very interesting.
You know? And you've sort of sat here and chatted about how you've, you know...
constantly reinvented yourself.
Yeah.
You have to.
So no wonder
you guys do the same thing. I mean, you're constantly tweaking the show, adding this. I got another idea. Let's try it. Let's test it. If it doesn't work, no, let's
trying to find different audiences, different platforms.
Exactly.
Right. We went on Queer Eye last year, was it? Yeah, it was last year. You know, like, and they tried to make me into a reasonable human being and failed utterly.
Yeah, but you tried, and that's the main thing.
We tried. That's the main thing. We got the viewers while we tried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, nobody can knock you for trying.
It's interesting, you know. I think it's probably influenced from people like Donnie and Pat and Tala and yourself. It's also like understanding those peaks and troughs. And more than anything, just as an outsider, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I've noticed being around Piff is it's also true gratitude of the people that are in front of you, the fans that, you know, that you may have more at some time, you may have less, but those are the people that you continue the wave, you know, and you watch Penn and Teller yourself do meet and greets and all that sort of stuff. It's like what you just said about the people that it might be their first time. Yeah. And I was in Mad Apple, and you know, no one came to see me, but just being there on a night that you think might not have been as good as the other night, and then having these people, it's not an emotional show, but coming with tears in their eyes because they haven't been to a live show before, or you know, you just don't know.
I just assume now, and it sounds arrogant, but it's just been proven correct over the years. There's always somebody who has flown across the country to see the show that night. They've like sacrificed to be here, and all they want is for this show to be as good as they hope it can be.
Mm. So true.
You know, and it's just, and that's just every time. Now I can kind of think of like three or four occasions when I've just been tired. And I've just been like, it's been too much. And I've gone, okay, I can't give it all tonight. And then afterwards, I'll be in the meet and greet and somebody will say something. I mean, they're just like, I'm like, oh, why did I give up? I wish I'd have pushed through somehow.
It's what's so frustrating, I think, when you go to some shows and you know, as a performer maybe, you really know, you go, oh, they're phoning it in. Most of the audience don't know, but it just makes me angry because I'm just like, someone's waiting there to take it from you.
See,
you
know? I switched the meet and greet for this very reason that you've
I just wanted to talk about your meet and greet because you have not only do you have the greatest show in Las Vegas, somehow you have the greatest meet and greet in Las Vegas, is an hour long, right?
It's about an hour long, and I do it before the show.
Right.
It's called a pre-show, and I keep it very small, maybe 30, 40, 50 people is all.
Yeah.
And we spend this hour telling stories, and I hear stories from them. That's why I switched it. I want to hear these stories because it's really my warm up for the show. It's my motivation. I hear these compelling stories and fun stories. And night before last, we were in stitches. It was the funniest hour. So funny. But sometimes it's very serious. People tell them dying of cancer. This is my last trip.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I better give a good show.
Right.
You know, it's one of those situations.
Yeah. That's a fantastic idea.
And then
idea.
I take pictures with every single one of them.
Right.
Before they leave. And then I have about 20 minutes to get ready. Boom, we do the show.
That's cool. Yeah, that really gets you pumped up.
It just switches the whole dynamic.
Victoria Wood used to say you should go on stage as you come off stage. When you come off stage, you're hyped. Yeah, she was like, get on stage feeling like that.
Who said that?
Victoria Wood.
Victoria Wood, okay.
Yeah.
British comedian.
I love the idea of having, I hadn't thought about how clever that is, having it beforehand, because you get that love from the audience.
You get that energy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, wow.
And then you're not having to like sit there and pretend that there's...
Was telling us about Howie Mandel's meet and greet with the table?
It was Howie Mandel, wasn't it?
No, that was here. Howie did a thing where his meet and greet before the show, he would hide under a table and people would come into the theater and he's hiding under one of those long, you know, like a normal unfold table. And he'd be hiding there and everyone would come in and then he'd go, okay, you first. His hand would come out, point to someone, they'd have to come under the table and then he'd sign an autograph. And he was just doing it to screw with people as a bit of shtick.
Oh, okay. But it wasn't so his germophobic thing.
No. He would just, people would come in and they'd be waiting for Howie and then they'd just hear this voice from under the table, like 20 people. And
I love that stuff because nobody's
that's
ever going to forget that.
No.
And you're the thing with your meme. No, but it's an hour. And like somebody will say, I remember somebody was asking about your kids or something, and you told this amazing story about how you realized you had to be there for your son, and he called you in the middle of a rehearsal or a performance, recording session, and you saw the call come in, and you stopped everything, walked out the booth, and picked up, and he was like, "Hey, I just wanted to see whether you would pick up," When I Need You.
That was my son Brandon.
Yeah.
I was doing an album. I stopped it, and I after we had this story or this conversation, I canceled this recording session. And I said, I got to write a song right now. And I wrote a song that was probably one of the most important songs I've ever written, called Whenever You're in Trouble.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's, you always take those calls. You always.
I mean, my dogs can't use a phone, so I've got nobody to.
I'm still looking for someone to call me. Jade's with you the whole time. Yeah, my dog, if my dog works out how to use the phone, I'm there.
Jade also never has her phone on her as well. So, yeah, we need more people. If you're out there
is
watching.
Is Jade kind of technically challenged?
Would you say
is that a dangerous question? I mean, you say she doesn't have a phone. She doesn't like the technology?
She's very good at an iPad.
Okay, go. Okay.
But she just. Computers are not her thing.
Oh, seriously?
She doesn't use a computer ever.
I like Jade. Yeah. She's the best.
Yeah, she's the best. And and the other thing is, she can never see anything unless it involves her. So I'm on the computer, you know, and I'm like, can you just look at this? What do you want from this menu? Here's the, you know, this is the menu. I can't see it. And then I'll take my phone and I'll text. I'll be like, I think Jade. And she's like, what are you writing about? Who are you talking to?
Selective vision.
That's funny.
That's why she's in charge of security.
What was your favorite thing about being here at the Flamingo? A night that you were like, oh my God, that was magical.
There's too many.
I miss the thrust stage.
Yeah.
I like the thrust stage.
I love it.
Because it gets you out in the middle. Or not in the middle, but ish.
Yeah.
And I miss that part. I miss the personnel. I love the people backstage. I miss my dressing room. It was George Wallace's dressing room.
Yeah.
And when he left, he says, I want you to have it. Not Marie. I want you to have it.
We've got Marie's.
You got Marie's?
We got the steam shower.
I didn't know she had a steam shower.
Yeah.
She kept that secret. You're starting a family feud now.
I'm okay with that.
Are the markings still on the wall of the height?
We cut them out and we gave them to Marie.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we painted over everything.
Is everything still black and white, or did you redo it?
No, yellow.
Yellow. Okay. Yeah.
Like this.
Oh, sweet.
It looks like this. One flew over the cuckoo's nest.
Yeah. Nice ball to bang my head against.
I miss the saying. I can't remember it now. I can't quote it verbatim. As we walk down the stairs to the stage, there's a saying. We are the performers.
Oh, we are the music makers.
Music makers. Yes. I think that's still a saying. There, huh? I'd see that every time and remind me, do a good job. We're the music makers.
I see in my dressing room, the shower has a note on it.
A note?
A note. It's a Bible verse. And it says, I can do all things through Chris T, who gives me strength. Because for some reason, it's Chris and then a massive T instead of Christ. So whenever I read it, I'm like, Chris T. I can do all things through Chris T. Come on, Chris T, give me strength.
Who put that there?
I guess Marie must have put it there.
Oh, that's funny.
But yeah.
You have met... just sitting here and listening to some of the people that you, and it doesn't feel name droppy at all because these are people you genuinely know and knew. Is there anyone you always wanted to meet that you didn't? Because I feel like you must have met everyone, must have either come to the show, been working alongside you, around. You did so
dead
many
or alive.
TV specials.
Dead or alive.
Either. I mean, gosh, you just listening to it, you're like, oh, this was your career. It's like being
also,
around
I'm sure there
were
plenty of people you met who disappointed you because that's life, you know.
Yeah, right. I won't tell names, but
no, exactly.
One guy
no, forget that.
Rather not see.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
But for me, one of the amazing things in my career has been to meet the people who I like, idolized and admired, and them to be as great.
Do you know
as
who I worked
I
with?
I always hoped.
It's so cool, Groucho Marx.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I worked with him. He was on the Donnie and Marie show.
I love him.
And it never made the air because he had to leave because his blood pressure was going up. He made a big mistake. We surrounded him with dancers that were kind of scantily dressed.
Right.
Blood pressure, boom. So we got to pull him.
Get him out of it.
And yeah. So
that's funny in itself.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Bob Hope, Lucille Ball, John Wayne.
Right.
All these people on the show. And then we did the Donnie and Marie talk show around 2000. We had so many people on there.
Yeah.
You know, just...
It's so great when somebody you love is even better than you can imagine. Yep.
Barbara Eden. I had such a crush on her. And we had... what's his name? Captain... on the I Dream of Jeannie. Who shot?
We can't help you because we weren't in the country at that time.
Oh, okay. Everybody's screaming the name at the screen right now. But we had a reunion of the I Dream of Jeannie show. And Barbara Eden, I had such a crush on her as a kid. And she was just so
Oh, that's
sweet.
Jeannie from I do know who you mean by
yeah. Tony Nelson. Thank you very much.
See?
Tony Nelson. Yeah, I mean, the whole cast was there.
I mean, to sit here and be like, you know, oh, how many people are in show business that are going, oh, you know, I would have opened with the night that I took over the showroom from Elvis.
Right.
You know, Elvis right. last night, me today. It's like, that's one story in amongst.
Yeah.
It's like crazy.
You know, when I look back at all that, it's almost like a different person to me.
Yeah.
Because this is another thing I learned from Elvis is that the guy that came into our dressing room the night after I saw him was a different person. He was just a real nice man, you know, talking to us.
Yeah.
But on stage, he was on fire.
Right. He was the person who said, hello, I'm Elvis Presley. Which does sound so ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it's the polite thing to do, right?
Exactly.
It's fascinating.
So as I think back and all these people that I worked with, you know, it's like, did I really meet them? Or was that my alter ego
right.
person? So it's kind of a strange dynamic that happens inside here that when I watch these like old films or whatever, and I said, I worked with that person. I auditioned for Gene Kelly for a film. Didn't make it, but I auditioned for Gene Kelly. And I see him singing in the rain. I knew that guy.
Yeah.
You know? Donald O'Connor. I danced with him.
Yeah.
It's just...
Being on the lot in California, I mean, like, that must be wild. I mean, every time we've been down for like... America's Got Talent or something, you go on the lot and you're just like, as age, and then you like realize what's around you, the history that's around you.
It's well, the Dining Room Talk Show was done in the stage where The Wizard of Oz was done. And do you remember the movie Tom Hanks did, Castaway?
Yeah.
Do you remember the scene where he's at the Thanksgiving table and, oh, something wrong with the tooth and the beeper goes off? I was right behind the camera during that scene because it was across the aisle from the Donnie and Marie show.
Oh, so you went over to watch them?
So I went over to watch and talked to Tom for a while, and it's kind of surreal that I know these people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And then I walked out, and there's Harrison Ford. So we talked for a little while, and I know that sounds like name dropping.
No, it doesn't. No, because it's why we're here.
Yeah. But what's really interesting to me, and please don't take this as an egotistical statement, but Harrison Ford knew who I was.
Right.
All these people knew who I am.
Surreal.
Know who I am. And it's kind of like, really? And then you kind of equate it to the other hat that I wear. So strange dynamic in my mind.
Yeah.
It really is.
But it's so interesting to hear that. I mean, Penn sat here and it was a beautiful moment he was talking about when he's again talking about their story, and he says Paul Simon was a big fan of Penn and Teller. And when we first went to New York, Paul Simon was walking into people's offices going, have you seen Penn and Teller yet? And giving them tickets to the show because he just loved
the
show.
That's so cool.
And like, and halfway into the sentence, I'm going, you mean Simon and Garfunkel, Paul Simon? And then he said this wonderful thing where he welled up a little bit, and he said, Paul Simon said to me, you know, if there's one thing I wish is that a few times in those earlier days, I'd have just turned to art and just thought about that moment. And so Penn said, even now, after all these years, just in those little moments when you're normally trying to scrabble to the next thing and the next thing, he's like, just try to like take a moment and enjoy that ride.
That's really, really cool.
So
why I think that your show is such a great, because you're just so present in the show. Every night you're there, you're performing. Like, I got a feeling like that all that dancing is just, you embody it.
Thank you.
Like 1,000%, and every little kick is perfection. Every little moment, you know, all of the looks you're giving, you're just in the room with the people, and you're loving it. And that's why I feel that you love that show, and performing so much. That's why it's like the best show in Vegas.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the compliment very much, because when I put the show together, the first thing I said to myself, and Raj Kapoor, who helped me direct this thing, I said, I want people to walk out thinking they just spent 90 minutes in my living room.
Right.
That's the whole concept. And then I started putting the details together, putting the puzzle together. But this is my living room, and you're going to experience 90 minutes with me with six decades of show business. And that's how I created it.
Well, I love it. If you are in Las Vegas, now you're only here like 22 weeks a year?
24, I think.
Only 24.
Which is basically a part-time.
You know what drives me crazy? And I'm sure this drives you guys crazy too. People come in and they play for 3 weeks and they call it a residency.
I feel like that about people who do 24 weeks. But sure. You're only here what?
How many weeks do you do?
We do 48.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, we do 48
Twice
weeks.
Twice as much, man.
Yeah.
Dan, ask him what he does on the 4 weeks that they take off. Goes on tour.
Yeah, exactly. Goes on tour.
But you know, we have three dogs to spread the load over, so okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, but there's only one Piff.
There's only one me to shout at the children. Yeah.
Until we get the hologram, the AI hologram.
That's it. That's it.
I'm gonna come and see. I haven't seen the hologram, so I'm gonna come and see it.
You would really like it. In fact, Penn Jillette called me up. Penn and Teller, Penn Jillette, and he calls me up and he says, "Donnie, I hate you." I said, "What did I do?"
That sounds like an opening from Penn.
Exactly.
For sure. Yeah.
I said, "What did I do?" He said, "I have been looking at this hollow box technology, trying to figure out how to put it into my act, and you beat me to it."
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. So we're all going to come with a group outing.
Okay, let me know. I'll get you the worst seat in the house.
Perfect.
Great. Yeah.
We're coming to the pre-show. We're going to come, mess with shit.
Give me a hard time in the pre-show.
Give me a hard show at the pre-show.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming in tonight.
I love talking to you guys.
I love, one of the great things about moving to Vegas has been getting to know you. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you, John. I appreciate that very much.
Thanks for listening to What Happened in Vegas. Don't forget to follow us wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. Preferably a nice one, right?
Yeah. If you hated it, find five places you hated it and give us a star for each of those.
Yeah, if you get five good things from a podcast, that's enough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.